This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Committee to make sure that we speak into the mic because they're having a kind of a hard time hearing us. So I would just remind you to do that today. And if you have anyone who's going to testify today, you have any handouts that you need presented, please get those to our pages. And our pages, why don't you come up and tell us your name and what you're going to be doing. And we thank you for serving this last 2 weeks.
Good morning. My name is Brigetta Rasmussen. I'm currently a junior at Alcester Hudson High School. And after I graduate, I plan to attend Louisiana State for Ag Business and Ag Education.
Great. Thank you.
How did you pick Louisiana State?
I think it was their football team.
Hi, I'm Eve Gable. I'm from Watertown. And I plan on going to LATI for a medical laboratory science degree.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and again, thank both of you for serving this last 2 weeks. The first bill that we have in front of us this morning is House Bill 1128 to require the court to consider the preference of certain children when awarding child custody in divorce cases. We have a proponent, a testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Boland, State Representative, District 16. I represent all of Union County and the southern rural portion of Lincoln County. Today I bring before you House Bill 1128, a bill that would require judges to consider the preference of children in child custody disputes. And by the way, I do have an amendment to this bill that would specifically require this for children at least 14 years of age, and if the pages could pass that out at this time. She's already done that. Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Why don't you go ahead and talk about the amendment as well.
Okay. And the amendment is very, very simple. It just adds on page 1, line 10, or at least 14 years of age is the simple change that it makes there. I'll go back to my original statement. It seems to me that as a child progresses in life, their consideration should be given more credence in these difficult child custody disputes. I'm now going to introduce to you Renee Shequin of Elk Point. I want you to know, geographically, that Elk Point is closer to Des Moines, Iowa, the capital, than it is to Pierre, the capital of South Dakota. So this trip by Renee represents a significant investment of time, and I urge you to give her and her viewpoint due consideration as we look into this bill. Again, House Bill 1128. Thank you so much, and we'll hear from Renee at this time.
Great. Welcome, Ms. Shequin.
Thank you.
You need to move up.
Okay.
And you're going to talk slow, right?
I wrote it.
I heard
slow.
Representative Boland.
Okay. Well, how do you condense nearly a decade and a half of suffering into a five-minute speech? I do not know how to do that. And much of it is too painful to want to discuss in depth anyway. My children have had things taken from them that can never be reclaimed: their health, their childhood, their mother. They have been subjected to emotional abuse, one of the most egregious being in the form of severe gaslighting, and they have experienced tremendous physical suffering as well. They have been stuck in a situation that no human being should ever have to be stuck in, all because adults in positions of power have made decisions for them that they should have been able to make for themselves. They have been forced to serve a prison sentence of sorts in a place they desperately do not want to be. By coming here to speak to you today, I am not trying to convince you that I should have custody of two pieces of property. I am trying to educate you about the fact that two human beings should have the right to choose something as basic about their own lives as whom they live with. Their situation is an extreme example of the consequences of a failed system, and you can probably think of less consequential matters in custody situations. But rather than judges trying to figure out who might be trying to make whom look bad in some absurd and horrendously expensive game, giving children the right to choose and the voice they deserve eliminates the entire wasted process and takes power away from abusers. It gives children a right that every human being should have, a right to have a saying in deciding their own destiny. I will now read to you an editorial that I wrote back in December. At age 11, children can take babysitting classes and get certified to take care of other children. At age 12, they can take gun safety classes and legally handle firearms. At age 14, in the state of South Dakota, they can drive a car without an adult present to certain locations. All of these activities put children in the position of making life and death decisions, impacting both themselves and others. Yet they are not considered competent enough to decide which parent they want to live with in custody situations. It is absurd. The term custody needs to go away. Children are not property and should have the autonomy in deciding their own fate, regardless of what a social worker or judge chooses to believe. My own children's voices were silenced by a system that preferred to believe the voice of a slick abuser over their own. Abuse doesn't always take the obvious form of broken bones and bruises. The best abusers know how to do damage without leaving marks. Abuse can take the form of playing too rough with children, whipping them around like rag dolls until they are dazed or in tears, causing chronic neck and back problems, or toughening up a child by sitting on his back and jabbing an elbow into it, until he is in tears and can't breathe. Neglect can take the form of knowingly exposing children to high levels of a toxic substance such as asbestos and then trying to cover up the resultant chronic health problems to the point of even denying them rescue inhalers when they are needed. Neglect can also take the form of leaving loaded firearms laying around and even worse, using guns as a way to intimidate children. There are many unconventional and unobvious ways to negatively impact the well-being of children, and what someone on the outside of a situation chooses to believe shouldn't matter. Even in situations where no abuse occurs, children should have the right to choose where they want to live. This is a human rights issue, and it's time for a change. This is why I want to get a law passed that would give children ages 14 years and older the right to choose which parents they live with in custody situations. It shouldn't be about who has the most money to spend in court or who can win a popularity contest. It should be about where children feel safest and most comfortable. Only they know that. So I hope you will do the right thing today and vote in favor of this law. Thank you.
Can you tell the committee where that was published?
The Argus Leader.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Chico, and thank you for coming and making the trip and the effort.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
You bet. Do we have any other proponents for House Bill 1128? Any other proponents? Seeing none, how about any opponents to House Bill 1128?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tom Barnett, representing the State Bar. The Family Law Committee has reviewed this bill, and they unanimously recommend that it be sent to the 41st day. Roger Hunt, Representative Hunt, was here. It was a different room. Back in the early 90s, when there was a ongoing argument between Rubin and Larry Gabriel on the difference between may and shall. And the good majority leader won that argument because he passed a one-sentence statute that said shall mean shall. Thus, I'm suggesting to you that when you look at this particular bill, you are mandating, and I think the proponents are making that crystal clear, you're mandating that the court involve the children in that process. We think that's a mistake. Very few things in a child's life are more traumatic than parents that are divorcing. Forcing the children to make an election is even worse. Children already feel guilty. All the child psychologists tell us that children, in a very large percentage, blame themselves for the demise of the relationship between the mom and dad. Making them come before the court and pick is putting the children in the same position of the famous movie, very traumatic, Sophie's Choice. The children love both. And it would be naive to assume that one parent or the other isn't going to inform their child, you have this option, and make them choose. And that's very unfortunate. The court can already consider, as it tries to determine the best interests of the children, if they are sufficient maturity, they can consider that. And the courts, in fact, do that. What happens if you have a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old, two children? The one gets to speak, the other one doesn't? Are you going to split the children based on their preferences? If you think that one parent wouldn't try to buy that election, it would be naive. There was a case coming out of Rapid City where, in a custody dispute, the dad spent many, many hundreds and hundreds of dollars on a wardrobe for his daughter, but restricted that those clothes had to stay in his house. She could not wear them when she was primary custody was with mom. The children are going to be used in this fashion. The other part of the problem with it is it's empowerment. It's clear. So a 14-year-old now under this bill can assert that right, even in situations where mom and dad have agreed what's in the best interest of the children. Primary custody is going to go with mom, dad gets this visitation, or vice versa, and they hammer out what's the visitation. Now this 14-year-old can sit there and say, I want my opportunity to go to the judge, and I'm going to tell him what I think. You don't think that children or some children aren't going to take advantage of that situation? Do I get a car, Dad? Well, otherwise I'm going to go with Mom. Don't put the children in the middle of this. These are terrible emotional times, and the children do not need to be a pawn or, in this case, arguably the queen that can go anywhere on that chessboard, depending on who's promising the most. Mom will allow me to have my boyfriend spend the night on weekends, so I'm going with Mom, or vice versa. Dad will let me do that. Dad will give me a car. Mom won't let me drive. She doesn't think I'm mature enough. Don't put children in the middle of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Do we have any other opponents to House Bill 1128?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Greg Satizon, the State Court Administrator with the Unified Judicial System. I had originally not planned to speak on this bill, but as a result of the amendment, I thought it important to point out some concerns. And the reason I usually wouldn't speak on a bill like this is we defer to the legislature on a policy decision such as this and what that would mean for the children in the court case. But I think it's also very important with the language, as I read it, of the amendment. Courts under the current law have quite a bit of discretion to determine, is the child of a sufficient age to make that decision? They also currently have the discretion to decide, should you require that child to make that decision on the record in front of their parents in open court? And I think both of those two things are important. When you look at the amendment, I think now if the child is over the age of 14, the judge no longer has that ability to consider that their ability to express that preference. I think every child is different, and 14, maybe at 14 they are. I really am not an expert in that, but I also think that removes that discretion to make a decision based on that child and what they've expressed. And I think it is important when you think about this that, we're all used to sitting here talking in front of a bunch of people. A 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, whatever the judge would decide is a sufficient age, 10-year-old, 8-year-old, will be on the stand in front of the judge, in front of their parents, in front of their lawyers, subject to cross-examination, that transcript recorded. This is a open case. Child custody decisions are open case types. Anybody can read the record of that case. At a certain point in the future, it'll be available over e-access for anyone to look at the record in that case. And it really does, force that person to and that child to express that decision, and that might happen now, and I think it does, but under the current law, the court has a lot of discretion to put some protections, I think, in place and to look at the situation, and we feel like the change here, particularly with that age specification, really does force the court's hand to put that child on the stand. And so those are my comments. I certainly would have be happy to answer any questions, but I felt that was important to point out. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any other opponents to House Bill 1128? Seeing none, Representative Boland or Mrs. Shiquan, would you like to do a rebuttal, please?
And I'll just defer most of this to Renee.
Well, I wish I had the time to give, more well thought out answers. But I heard this gentleman talking and I thought, wow, what trivial issues. Wouldn't it be great if, all people, there were two good parents, and the biggest concern was a wardrobe of clothing, you know. But, you know, there are other issues here, and I would recommend that all of you watch, there's a PBS documentary called Breaking the Silence, and it's about how the court system fails so many children who are victims of abuse. And I think that is the issue here. This is, you know, if 9 out of 10 kids maybe get empowered and have some sort of control over their parents, you know, that's not ideal. But if you save one child from severe abuse with something like this, then it's worth it. You know, I've spent probably $50,000. My ex-husband told me he would bury me financially and make it so I never see my children again. And he has pretty much done that. But I have hung in there long enough. And they do have severe health issues. And this man even tried to make it so that I could not look at their medical records because he wants to be able to deny care and to abuse them and not be held accountable. I have had to file a complaint with... Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just
you're
so passionate about it.
You're doing fine. We got plenty of time.
Off yourself.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I just... What I see here is people on the outside not realizing the significance of how, you know, certain individuals use the family law and the court system as a way to further inflict abuse, to further punish, to, you know, it's a very important and significant issue, and to trivialize it and to say, you know, every child doesn't want to make that choice is incorrect. There certainly are those children, and you know, I realize that divorce is a heated thing and a horrible thing, but something you should realize is that 75% of all contested custody cases involve abuse. And, you know, you're so concerned about the child manipulating things or the child, you know, feeling guilty about being in the middle. That occurs. But there are worse situations, and the worst situation is when a child is not in the middle, when the child wants to get away from a situation, but because it sounds too bad, or because other people choose not to believe it, or because you hear the word custody and think, oh, it must not be true, those children are forced into horrible situations, and I would rather avoid one child being in a horrible situation than, you know, some other children dealing with a not perfect situation, or you think they're getting away with something, whatever. I guess the loss here is too great. As far as I'm concerned, that's why I think this is important, and I think they should have a voice. I heard him use the point queen or empowering. Children should be empowered. Children are very, you know, I guess I just don't think that's the worst thing in the world.
Okay, is that everything?
Thank you, committee, very much. Thank you,
Ms. Sheikin. Thank you for coming.
You.
The long drive, I know. I've driven it.
Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to close testimony and open it up to committee questions. Any committee questions? Yes, Representative Sato.
For Mrs. Sheikin.
Mr. Boland, why don't you go up there with her, please?
That's why I'm here.
Thank you.
And just for the record, our guest here does prefer to be called Renee in this situation. Thank you.
I apologize. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So my understanding, I'm divorced. I've been through a custody hearing and all of those things, so I have a point of view as understanding what that experience is like. My understanding currently is that children are asked at a certain age, to a certain extent, that's factored in.
And there was...
Okay. Were your children ever asked?
The judge would not allow them to, he didn't want to talk to them, but he did say there could be a family study, and in the family study, they both clearly stated they wanted to live with me. The individual doing the family study said that she felt that it was because I had turned them against their father. You know, they had said some negative things that were very true. So if you read, the judge went completely against what the children's wishes were, because the person doing the family study said, you know, no, they're just saying this because they're being turned against their father.
Follow up. Any other questions by committee members?
I have a question.
Yes, Representative Mickelson.
This may be a question for Mr. Barnett, but it's a general question, or maybe a question for a committee member, but what's the practice of the court in asking for the children to express that preference, which now is permissive? What's the practice? To Mr. Barnett, you don't know?
I can answer that.
Okay.
I guess I could answer it. I've been doing family law for 38 years, and generally what happens in South Dakota is this, is that when there is a clearly going to be a custody issue, the judges generally require a home study, and where then the parents, the person goes to each parent's home, they talk to the parents, look at the house, make sure, of course, safety issues. They have then an opportunity to watch the children interact with each parent. Then they generally speak to the children, of course, depending on their age, and all those factors kind of come into play, and then they submit that report to the court. And then the court then, I've had different judges handle that differently. Some judges do not want to make, will not talk to the children because it's their position that if they do, then the children feel like they're the ones making the decision, and they don't want them to feel that that's, you know, that they've done that. I've had other judges, depending upon their age and the circumstances based upon the home study, in fact, talked to the children. So it's kind of whatever. It's up to the judge because the standard of care in South Dakota is what's in the best interest of the children, and our current law allows them the flexibility to take each case differently and determine where they feel like they need to get the facts and information before they make that decision.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions by committee members? Seeing none, then I'm going to close our public testimony and questions and then open it up to committee discussion. Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would certainly really empathize with Renee and her situation. I, too, am a divorced mother of a daughter, and my former husband was an attorney. You know, let's make things really difficult. And he also had a substance abuse problem and was, I was a victim of domestic abuse prior to my divorcing him. And we had a shared custody agreement when I lived in the state of Arizona, and my daughter was 10 at the time. And there were instances where she did not tell me about a lot of things that went on when she was at his residence, and things that came up much later. For example, her birthday party where she had some girlfriends over to his place, and they opened up a bedroom door where he was and watched him snort cocaine, and all of her little girlfriends left. So this was a very, you know, dangerous situation. Of course, she did not tell me that this went on until she was maybe in her 30s, because she knew that I would march right back into court and expose him and try to get custody. In my situation, I rectified it by moving from Arizona to South Dakota, and therefore I did have to go back to court and get custody of my daughter. And I got her away from that situation. That's not the only reason I moved back to South Dakota, but anyway, that was part of it. But I understand your situation. However, my daughter loved her father. He doted upon her. He was pampered her. He did buy her silk negligees when she was like 5 years old, and fur coats, and you know, she was daddy's little girl, and she loved her father, and so it was a very touchy situation. And she's told me that she did not want to be in the middle of that situation to choose. It was absolutely miserable, and I feared for her life and everything else. But you know, it putting the children in that situation to choose is horrible as well. So I just wanted to weigh in and let you know that what you're doing trying to protect your children is exemplary, and we just sometimes have to trust that our judges will will take into consideration the entire situation with all of the information that they're given, and that we don't put our children in that situation, but we can keep them out of danger, and it's a really tight rope sometimes. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gibson.
Mr.
Can I just
Jim?
Do one thing, Representative Hunt? You know, we have this Amendment 1128 JA, and I think it might be a good idea for us to move the motion.
I'll move.
So that we can
second.
And so then we can, when you're discussing it, we can all have it all on the same page. So we have a motion, a second. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Yes.
Okay. We have one nay. Motion passes. Okay, so we're back on discussion and or action on House Bill 1128 as amended.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Over the years, I've seen a number of cases where we have an individual who I'll just label as being a victim of some sort. And several times, you know, my heart has just jumped out to that particular victim. And I said, we've got to make this right. This is wrong, and so on and so forth. And then you basically say, well, let me rethink this. And then you start to say, are we making a decision about a particular piece of legislation just based on one incident? And if that's the case, we want to look at it carefully. And I think in this case, where many of us may have sympathy for Renee and her situation, we've got to bear in mind that this law would apply not only to Renee's situation, but to the situation involving a lot of other families, children, spouses, etc., in the future. And I think that the idea of making this a shall rather than a may takes away judicial discretion, doesn't necessarily take into full consideration what the impact of having those children in court would be. So I think it's important when we're looking at a case like this that we look not only at the facts of the proponents, but also look at the real long-term impact of changing a simple may to a shall. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Haugard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just point out, I don't think that the wording compels the court to have that child in the courtroom. And the fact is that over the years, it really does vary from one judge to another what kind of an audience you're going to get with asking for this kind of thing. So with the, I believe with the continuing education that judges get these days and more awareness of the fact that these are real issues, that kids are being used more and more for pawns oftentimes. I think most anyone who's assigned to address the domestic relations issues in court, they're going to be a little more aware of that, more sensitive to that. I understand there are compelling situations where someone's gotten over on the court, in a sense. And I've got a couple of those right now where I feel like if that person could be exposed, it would be a real benefit to the court in making a decision. But the sad part is the kids are being manipulated, and even in a situation like that where I think you made reference to it, somebody gets promised something, you've got that coming into play, and the kids really do become pawns in that situation. So the amendment, I'd be opposed to the amendment because it makes reference to at least 14 years of age. I think the general floating rule is somewhere around 12 years of age, and I know the court will oftentimes consider kids even younger than that. So I hate to see that amendment in there, for one thing, but the opportunity for the court to wisely consider the preferences of the child, I think, is still there. I don't believe that this says that they have to be in a courtroom setting to consider that preference. They could certainly take them into chambers and that sort of thing as well. So I'm personally very sympathetic to your plea here for forcing the court to consider this, but those kids really do get manipulated by the parties in too many cases, and you hope and you trust that the judge will be keenly aware of that possibility and that if there's a home study done, it's effective and they can discern some of those things. So I believe the court should have the latitude. I don't like the amendment as far as the age being thrown in there, and I believe the courts these days being assigned domestic relations cases on a longer-term basis, at least in our circuit, I see them as being better educated in the issues surrounding the relationship. So I would not be supporting the bill, even without the amendment.
Thank you. Do we have any other committee comments or action? Representative Johns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a simple observation. Divorces are traumatic events for the husband and the wife or the parties that are being divorced, and then when we involve children in them, it's even more so traumatic for them. I'm a great fan of keeping the children out of the divorce as much as possible, and I think that if you're going to involve them in over a custody issue, we're just going to traumatize them more. We have home studies. They serve an excellent purpose. It's done by professionals that can talk to these children, and they can relate quite well with the preferences of the children are to the courts. If the parties, when I was on the bench, would request that I would talk to the children, I sometimes did, sometimes didn't, based upon usually the home study and what I was getting feedback from the parties. It's nice once in a while to do that, especially when they're much older, like 15, 16, rather than at any young age. I don't want to involve young children in these divorces any more than we have to, so I would suggest that we vote no.
Do we have some kind of committee action here?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mickelson.
I'll move to the 41st day.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Representative Mickelson, a second by Representative Langer to move it to the 41st day. Any comments on your motion?
I appreciate the expertise of this committee on this issue, and I think the case here is sympathetic, and it's not a reflection on your circumstances, ma'am, but rather on trying to set a policy that applies to an untold number of situations. So we appreciate you coming here. Thank you.
Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion before the committee is to send House Bill 1128, an act to require the court to consider the preference of certain children when awarding child custody and divorce cases to the 41st day. We'll have the secretary will call the roll. All in favor say aye. All those against say nay.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Johns.
Aye.
DeSanto.
Aye.
Augard.
Aye.
Langer.
Aye.
Latterell excused. Peterson.
Aye.
Russell.
Aye.
Westra excused. Gibson.
Aye.
Hiller.
Aye.
Stevens.
Aye.
Nicholson.
Aye.
11 yea and 2 excused.
We have 11 yea, 2 excused. The House Bill 1128 will be moved to the 41st day. We are going to move on to House Bill 1134, which I shouldn't say move on. We're going to defer House Bill 1134 until Monday. And I think we're also going to, just for the audience's information, it's my understanding that House Bill 1165, the sponsor of that bill, is going to ask that it be tabled. So if anybody has been hanging around for that bill, I don't want you to have to do that. Otherwise, we're going to move on to House Bill 1153, an act to reform eminent domain by consensus. All proponents, testimony at this time. I see we have a handout. Thank you. Representative Johns.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Timothy Johns. I'm a representative from District 31, which is Lawrence County. Mr. Chairman, I have before you an amendment and a title amendment. Amendment would be 1153 RA, And the title amendment is 1153 JTA, and I would request that I could speak to both.
You may.
Thank you. The act is originally presented was an act to reform eminent domain by consensus. Now, SDCL 21-35 is a portion of our code which is titled Condemnation Under Power of Eminent Domain, which allows utility companies and other users of this power to condemn private property for a public purpose. And there are a number of people that have been working on this. It's been in the news lately. I have landowners and also utility companies that have come to me, and they have come to a consensus on this bill. So without further ado, I'm going to have them speak to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative John. Do we have any other proponents to House Bill 1153?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Brett Kennecke. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I'm representing the South Dakota Electric Utility Companies today. We've been working with other utilities and landowner groups over the course of the session to try and find consensus or common ground between the, I hate to say the two sides, but the people who are active in the discussion on eminent domain. Let's talk about what we can do that we can all agree upon and go forward with bills. I've said in this microphone before, and I'm sure I'll say it again before it's over, we have a 19th century statute dealing with 21st century problems. Much like the discussion over corporate law in this state, we have constitutional provisions which don't allow us to adopt some of the reforms that our neighboring states have adopted. We're trying to be collaborative here. In this case, what we came up with was the amendment that's in front of you. It might be the most harmless bill of the session. It might be also the most helpful. It's my feeling that landowners have been told you can't do anything about eminent domain. You can't stop eminent domain once it's started. And I think that's led to the understanding or connotation that you can't settle an eminent domain case once it has been started. And most of them, almost all of them, get settled and should. I'm a believer in settling cases, and we would want any landowner who's facing an eminent domain action to have a clear statement in the law and understanding you can settle this case, you can have it mediated as long as the parties agree, and so that people are of an understanding that a case can be mediated. It's as it says here, you can use the services of a mediator. You can obviously you can settle any lawsuit, but we thought a clear statement in the law would be helpful to everybody. So that's the 1153 before you. We're still chipping away at 1134, and we hope to come back Monday with language that works as well. The last thing I'll say is the deal was this. If anybody disagreed with what we were going forward with, if there were opponents to the bill, then it shouldn't go ahead. The deal was, this is about finding consensus. What can we agree on? What can we go forward with? So I hope there are proponents behind me, but if there's somebody who doesn't like it, I would be the first person to say it shouldn't go forward then. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other proponents to House Bill 1153? Any other proponents? Good morning.
Good morning, committee. My name is Brett Clanton. I'm from Buffalo. I own property that's impacted by the Trans-Canada Keystone XL pipeline. I welcome this addition. I mean, from someone that's went through a difficult easement process, this would be a nice addition in order for two sides to reach agreement on difficult issues. So I welcome this. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other proponents to House Bill 1153?
Good morning, Chairman Stevens, members of the committee. I'm Jeremiah M. Murphy from Rapid City. I'm the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Stock Growers Association, and I'll be brief, but I support all of the previous testimony. This is part of a bigger process, and I think the other, there's two sides in this, and I think the two sides have been working well together. It's a bit of a piecemeal process. We start, if you will, with the low-hanging fruit. This does represent low-hanging fruit. It's good, sound public policy, and I think you'll hear no disagreement today, so we'd urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other proponent testimony to House Bill 1153? Any other proponents? Do we have any opponents to House Bill 1153? Any opponents? Seeing none, we're going to waive rebuttal, and we'll go directly to committee questions. Let's go to that. Any committee questions?
Chairman?
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Question for Mr. Kennecke. Mr. Kennecke, in this amendment, we're using the word mediation. And just for clarity purposes, by use of that word as opposed to arbitration, this is going to be non-binding mediation?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Yes, that is correct, Representative Hunt. Mediation is a process whereby the parties agree to a settlement or not at the end, but mediation, in my experience, is not used to force a settlement or a result on anyone. It is a process whereby people discuss their issues and see if they can resolve the entire dispute or even parts of it going forward. Arbitration is, not sort of a non-judicial binding force, and that's not what this bill is about at all. This is about settling differences by discussing, getting in the same room, or however the mediator would put the thing together. I hope that's helpful.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So do you think it would add anything to what you're trying to accomplish if you made mention of the fact that litigation could continue if it had been started, or could be commenced if it hadn't been started, if the mediation is not successful?
Mr. Chairman, I am not dismissive of where you're going with that. We have worked hard and had to go back to our clients, numerous clients out of town, and I'm concerned that changing this today would cause that process to have to begin anew and set us back. I understand where you're going. I think there's some value in that. I'm not going to tell the committee what to do. I'm more comfortable if we leave this as it is for those political reasons of how we got to this point today. I hope that's helpful.
Representative Johns, do you have something to add to that?
Chairman, Representative Hunt, it's part of my practice. I do mediate matters amongst parties. There's mediation and there's arbitration, and there's two types of arbitration. There's binding and non-binding. And if you have arbitration, then you basically have a trial where you have somebody appointed to decide the facts as presented by the parties after they make their arguments. And you oftentimes have more than one arbitrator. You'll have each of the parties will select one, and then the two arbitrators will select one. But that gets to be complicated. We're trying to keep it simple. And I'll mediate matters while the litigation is going on. Oftentimes you got a divorce case, and I get in the middle of it while we try to settle it. And mediation is totally voluntary. That's what's nice about it. And usually the practice is, if you can get it settled, the fees of the mediator are usually paid for by an insurance company or one of the parties. That's part of the process, too. So it's a great process. I really like it. I encourage my clients to undergo it, and I encourage other people to utilize the process as well, because it saves everybody a lot of money and a lot of heartache. And you get finality, usually, because you have control over the decision, whereas if you litigate it, you don't. You've got to take whatever the judge decides, and that's not the end of the process, because then oftentimes you have appeals that follow. So it's nice to get it over with.
Any follow-up, Representative Hunt?
Just a comment. I'm not trying to defeat the bill. I just wanted to say if we're going to do something to make it more clear to all the parties, maybe this is the time to do it. On the other hand, I recognize the political ramifications and how long it takes to sometimes get a couple of strongly opposed groups to agree on much of anything. So that's just the reason for my questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Does the committee have any other questions? Seeing none, we're going to close the public testimony. We do have this amendment, 1153RA.
I'll move it.
Representative Mickelson moves it, and Representative Langer seconds it. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Do we have any further committee discussion or an action as it relates to 1153 as amended? Representative Hunt.
Move do pass as amended.
Okay, we have a do pass motion by Representative Hunt and a second by Representative Gibson. Any comments, Representative Hunt?
I don't think any further comments are necessary, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity, however.
Okay, so we have before us a motion do pass on House Bill 1153, an act to reform eminent domain by consensus, and I guess we can do the title amendment afterwards. We'll have the clerk call the roll, please.
Representatives Hunt?
Aye.
Johns?
Aye.
DeSanto?
Aye.
Elgard?
Aye.
Langer?
Aye.
Botterell, excused. Peterson?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Westra, excused. Gibson?
Aye.
Hiller?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Mickelson?
Aye.
11 yay and 2 not voting.
Okay, we have 11 aye and no dissent, 2 excused. House Bill 1153 as amended is passed.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hunt.
I would move Amendment 1153JTA, the title amendment.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Motion by Representative Hunt for Title Amendment 1153JTA was seconded by Representative Langer. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll have the, we really need a, just a voice vote, is that right?
Yes.
Just all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the motion, the Title Amendment is approved, and move on to the next bill, which would be House Bill 1165. Representative Haugard, how do you want to handle that? You want to?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd ask that be tabled at this time.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Representative Haugard, a second by Representative Mickelson. Roll call, right?
Yeah, final action.
So, clerk, call the roll, please.
Hunt?
Aye.
I'm sorry, Representative Hunt. Johns?
Aye.
DeSanto?
Aye.
Haugard?
Aye.
Langer?
Aye.
Latterell, excused. Peterson?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Westra? Excused. Gibson?
Aye.
Killer?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Mickelson?
Aye.
11 yay and 2 not voting.
11 yay, 0 dissent. House Bill 1165 is tabled. Brings us to our last bill, Senate Bill 79, an act to expand the list of professionals authorized to perform certain examinations required for a plea of guilty but mentally ill. We have a proponent. Oh, we're going to defer Senate Bill.
Oh, she's here.
She's here or not here? You want to defer it?
Yeah.
It's only 11.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
The out-of-town testifiers on the bill got together on both sides and indicated that they agreed to hear this on Wednesday when both their out-of-town testifiers could be here. That would be okay. We could take some testimony now if you want, but okay.
All right. So we're going to defer Senate Bill 79 to Wednesday. That's all the bills on our calendar. We have a motion to adjourn. Thank you, Representative Russell, and a second by Representative DeSanto. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right, we're concluded.